You're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, just here to let you know that this episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. People always talk about summer reading with reverence. Oh, a great page turner for the beach, or something intense and long to pore over while you drink your pour over coffee on an early misty morning. Maybe a great biography to read in the hammock. But Northeast summers are so short and packed so full of 11 billion things to do that you could be forgiven for piling up the books on your bedside table, pages still crisp and unturned. Which is why now is actually a great time to do our annual summer reading show, because we're heading into fall. Kids go back to school, socializing slows from its summer frenzy, and maybe, just maybe, you'll be able to pick up one of those books you made grand plans to read this summer. I mean, if we're going with cliches, what could be better than a crisp fall day, apple in hand, and a great book in your other hand as you relax in an Adirondack chair soaking in the season? We're almost there, folks. Well, here to get us in the mood are three avid readers who have the good fortune of focusing on books and business, of course, all year long. Elizabeth Blumley is the owner of the Flying Pig Bookstore in Shelburne and a children's book author herself. Elizabeth, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Really appreciate it.
Very nice to be here.
Amy Olson is library director at Lanford Memorial Library in Hyde Park. Amy, it's a pleasure to have you with us, too.
Thank you, Jane.
And we have another Amy. Amy Howlett is director of the Springfield Town Library. Hi, Amy. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for including me.
Before we get into specific book titles, I'm wondering if any of the three of you are seeing any trends. And I'll start us off with one, so I'm not putting you right on the spot. I mean, my goodness, if you're interested in reading about what goes on behind the scenes of the Trump White House, you can find any number of former staffers, including, of course, Omarosa, whose book comes out next week and is already a bombshell. Elizabeth, are people asking you for books about the current political situation?
There are so many on the bestseller lists, and they are flying out of the store.
Are they really? People
yes,
want to read them?
They do. And they'll pick that up and then also pick up an escape read at the same time.
Literal escape read? Or, you know, what are they thinking
anything
here in terms of
light
escape?
That isn't too reminiscent of some of the ongoing activities.
Amy Olson, what about you? What are you seeing?
Definitely. We have also had a patron who purchases the books and then donates them to the library. Sometimes it's hard for libraries to spend a lot of money on political books that are sort of fly-by. You know, they run out of their time, timeliness, but we definitely have them on the shelves. They're definitely popular.
So people are picking them up.
Definitely.
And that's
and
nice.
Requesting them.
And you have somebody who's donating them.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So you typically don't get books for the library that you think will have a relatively, and forgive me here for the pun, a short shelf life?
No, no. We do if they're popular and people are requesting them, but it's always, we have to be careful about how we spend our budget, and that's just one of the ways that we think about that.
Amy Howlett, what about in Springfield?
Oh my gosh, Amy set me up to look profligate. Ah, that's terrible. We are big enough and we serve a regional audience, so we try very conscientiously to keep up with that gall-darned bestseller list. So I buy a lot of stuff that hovers on the top for a week or two and then falls right off. And I'm always charmed if I can weed it a year later. You know, that's fine. The urge to read Michael Wolff suddenly passes and you wait for a little bit to see and then you can get rid of it. I would say paralleling what is actually happening is an interest in apocalyptic fiction. You know, what if we are at the last days and people seem to be picking those books up? It's a little scary. I myself go more for escapist, but I am seeing those books go out.
Amy, what apocalyptic titles are people picking up?
So I'm thinking of Gabriel Tallent's book, My Absolute Darling, a very abusive father and his 14-year-old daughter. And the prevalence of guns in that book drove me crazy. I couldn't put it down. I read it right to the end. But whoa. And I like the fact that it's fiction, but then I picked up Educated by Tara Westover, which is pretty much the same story, only she lived it. Her family was sure the end of time was upon them. And her father thought the cure for tonsillitis was to stand outside with your mouth open in the sun. So those two books have done very well in our collection.
Huh. Well, as soon as Amy Howlett said apocalyptic, Amy Olson pointed at Elizabeth Blumley. Elizabeth, are you selling apocalyptic fiction?
Well, we were talking about the rise in horror book requests. Our horror section was very flat for several years, and all of a sudden in the last year we've seen a huge upsurge in requests for that.
And do you actually attribute that to either a political climate or just a sort of an atmosphere?
I mean, I think it's an atmosphere. I think it's a cultural – it's hard to pin down why some things – there wasn't one book like Harry Potter spawned a fantasy wave that is still ongoing. With the horror, it's not that there was a book or movie that started it. I think – people's moods are shifting, and horror is a different kind of outlet.
Let's go to Nicole, who's calling in from Guilford. Hi, Nicole. Nice to hear from you.
Hi, Jane. First, as always, I wanted to thank you and your guests for doing this show. I always really look forward to it. But I wanted to mention a couple books by an author I've been reading a lot lately. Her name is Deborah Tannen, T-A-N-N-E-N. She's currently a professor of linguistics at Georgetown. And she's best known for her work in the field called social linguistics. That is how social factors like cultural differences and regional and class and occupation and even things like gender differences, how they affect communications among people, and especially things like misunderstanding among folks. A couple of her books. A few years back, she published a book called That's Not What I Meant. She always has these great titles. But that dealt with sort of the general issue over like a range of situations, like in the workplace or social interactions with friends or strangers or in the home. And there was a very popular chapter in that book which dealt specifically with sort of the interaction between men and women, which she later expanded into a book. It was called You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation. And anyway, she's written quite a few books, so I'll just mention one more, which is a bit more general in extent, called Conversational Style. All right, I'll stop now. I find this stuff fascinating, and I could go on forever, but I just thought I would mention her work.
Nicole, I appreciate that, and especially appreciate it coming on the heels of this conversation we've just been having, because, you know, people buying books about sort of political tell-alls and then maybe post-apocalyptical fiction. And then, you know, you're bringing in Deborah Tannen and this idea of maybe there are ways that we could be better communicators within our own households and in our communities and certainly as a nation. And maybe your suggestion, Nicole, is actually bringing us closer together in some way if we can sort of understand one another. You know, Nicole's taking us to nonfiction. Amy Howlett, do you have a good nonfiction recommendation?
Let's see. I gave you Educated already. I'm going to talk about Maggie O'Farrell. She's an Irish writer, and she wrote a wonderful memoir called I Am, I Am, I Am, 17 Brushes with Death. Each brush is a short essay. And when she says brushes with death, I picture myself driving home from some late night event. I'm on the interstate and my eyes start to drift close and I go over the rumble strip and I wake back up and I think, oh, man, that was close. That's a brush with death. Just wonderful, wonderful writing. She's so fresh and vivid the way she sees things. And, you know, how we experience things through our life. So some of her brushes with death go back to childhood, you know, jumping in over her head, not being aware of which way was up and somebody rescuing her. And some are later when she has a daughter and she worries about anaphylactic shock and that daughter's allergies.
Amy, do you think we've all had brushes with death?
Oh, Lordy, yes.
Amy Olson, do you agree? Do you have a brush with death?
I'm certain I have one with regularity, yes, as we all do.
What about you, nonfiction?
I have a book on my list that I haven't read yet, but it's on the top of my pile to read next, and it's The 57 Bus by Dashka Slater. It's a true story of two teenagers and the crime that changed their lives. It actually deals with hate crimes. It's a 16-year-old Richard Thomas who's on the 57 bus and commits a reckless act against Sasha Fleischman, an agender person who falls asleep on the 57 bus. And it's how the book explores race, gender, imprisonment, the class, justice system. And the reason I mention it and I'm so eager to read it is that it's on the Green Mountain Book Award list this year. It's a Stonewall Book Award winner and other nominees for awards, but also it was chosen as the 2018 Common Reads for Northern Vermont University at Johnson this year. So the author and the college will be having a lot of different programs. The author will be there, and I'm eager to read it so I can take part in some of those.
Oh, interesting. Elizabeth?
We have seen a very heartening interest in nonfiction books about white privilege. I think people are really trying to educate themselves and also the history of, you know, our racial history of this country. Black Klansmen has been selling a lot at the bookstore lately, and the books about white fragility that's on the bestseller list in paperback now. And it's really – they're wonderfully thoughtful books. There's a book coming out in September that is harrowing. It's fiction. It's short stories by a debut author named Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. And the book is called Friday Black, and I expect we'll all be hearing a lot about it. Some of it is speculative fiction. Some of it's realistic. And it is – an incredible look from the inside of a, you know, a mind wrestling with these issues.
I am a little bit chagrined to say that most of my book recommendations today are going to be children's books because it seems to be the only thing I have time for. But a nonfiction children's board book that I've been enjoying with my children is called And Tango Makes Three. And it's a book about these two penguins, two boy penguins who really want to make a family, but they obviously cannot make and fertilize an egg themselves. And so their zookeeper actually gives them an egg to raise, and they have this little baby named Tango. And it's a really lovely family story and great for kids, great pictures. It's a true story about some penguins in New York. And so I've been reading And Tango Makes Three over and over and over again. So, you know, if you want to read something multiple times, there's always children's boards books. All right, 1-800-639-2211. If you have a book that you'd like to share with us, Leslie emailed in to say an adult book, The Great Alone by Kristen Hanna. At first, it sounds like a great adventure to move up to Alaska in the 70s, and it would be for some. For Lenny and her mom, it's just one more place to move with their unstable dad slash husband, an isolated cold island where the darkness can overtake bursting out in violent behavior. This tale pulls you in and repels you at the same time that at points you just want to close your eyes till the bad parts are finished. Only if you do, you'll miss out on the beauty of Alaska, the friendship of neighbors, and the return to the land and home that shaped who you are at your very soul. And again, that's called The Great Alone by Kristen Hanna, recommended by Leslie. On Facebook, people are sharing just titles with us. Nan says 1,000 White Women, The Journals of May Dodd by Jim Fergus. Diana recommended Circe by Madeline Miller. Molly recommends Pachinko by Min Jin Lee. And Catherine says A Carnival of Losses by Donald Hall, not to be missed. And let's go to Stephen in Stratford. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hi. Braiding Sweetgrass, I've just finished it, and it's a wonderful book by Robin Kimmerer. It's an indigenous wisdom, scientific knowledge, and the teaching of plants. And another one that I read that I really liked is Medicine for the Earth, How to Transform Personal and Environmental Toxins, and it's by Sandra Engelman. And she wrote a book on soul retrieval, which was incredible, too.
Stephen, are you often into reading about holistic therapies and plant healing, or is this a new interest for you?
No, I've been doing it for years. It's wonderful. It really helps me shift and since I work with plants all the time, I garden a lot. So,
well, I appreciate the recommendations. Thank you for that. And let's hear from Lisa in Grafton. Hi, Lisa. You have a book recommendation for us?
Hi. So I'm escaping from today's news by diving back about 600 years to Italian Renaissance. So I'm reading Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson, which is absolutely wonderful. It makes the man come to life, and he was such a genius in so many ways, and I'm beginning to think Walter Isaacson may also be a genius to be able to portray him in such a spellbinding way. It's about 500 pages, but it reads easily, has lots of illustrations. The chapters are divided into short subchapters. There's a list of main characters. Everything that makes this very it's just accessible and wonderful and amazing at the same time. And I want to hop on a plane and go to Florence.
Lisa, is there one thing that you've learned that surprised you that you hadn't heard before about Da Vinci?
I did not know how few paintings he actually finished. His work habits were terrible, but he was so interested in so many things at once. And of course, in those days, there was no distinction between art and engineering and science, and he was pursuing everything at once. And so we're lucky that we have as many paintings and drawings and his own notebooks that we have, considering how he was all over the place.
Lisa, that's great. I appreciate hearing your pick, biography, Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson. And let's get another call in here from Bob in Rutland. Hey, Bob.
Yes, hi. I was just going to say, I was going to recommend sports titles.
Excellent.
One nonfiction, The Heritage by Howard Bryant. And then there's a couple of biographies, Alou by Felipe Alou and Hawk by former Red Sox player Ken Hawk Harrelson.
What's so great about the sports biographies that you've been reading?
Oh, it's just you learn about the human side of nature, because they have some back tales, like when Harrelson played like in Kansas City and so on, where Charlie O, the owner of the A's, had a donkey. And he was the one who got paid to ride the donkey. Little things like that, little background.
Well, Bob, that's great. I appreciate those recommendations, and thank you for calling in. Today, we are sharing the joy of reading with three bibliophiles who have some great recommendations. Amy Olson is library director at Lanford Memorial Library in Hyde Park. Amy Howlett is director of the Springfield Town Library. And Elizabeth Bloomley is the owner of the Flying Pig Bookstore in Shelburne. She's also a children's book author herself. Mike emailed in to say, I just read the novel There, There by new Native American author Tommy Orange. I thought it was terrific. It deals with the modern-day natives living in an urban environment, Oakland, California, and the various challenges they face. Reviews specifically in the New York Times have been outstanding. I can't say enough about this book. I look forward to seeing more from this new and gifted author. And Eva posted on our Facebook page saying, Homegoing by Yag Yassi. Beautifully written, intricate story that spans eight generations of two half-sisters and their descendants, one of whom was sold into slavery and the other who wasn't. Each sentence crafts and weaves the characters' lives in a spellbinding story that reveals the truths of power, survival, warmth, connection, and heartbreak through this historical tragedy. Ooh, they all sound good. Elizabeth Bloomley, you want to take us in another direction here? Maybe go to fiction?
Sure. There's some novels I have loved this year, loved recommending. There's a debut novel called A Place for Us by Fatima Farhin Mirza, and she's only 26 and feels to me that she has the wisdom of the ages. She writes about an Indian-American family in California in the 90s, and the frame is a marriage. The eldest daughter is getting married. She's managed to carve out a kind of independent path for herself in a very beautiful way, and her estranged younger brother has been invited to the wedding, and they don't know if he'll show up. And that's the framework. And then in between, you get every family member's story of how that unfolded to get to this place where the younger brother is estranged. And it's this beautiful exploration of how we create roles in our families and how we sometimes dig ourselves little trenches that we can't get out of. It's so well done. And I read it immediately after saying I would never read another family drama for a year. I was so tired of
the
genre.
You're tired of the Meghan Markle stuff, too. It's been in the news.
Right, exactly. There's so many. And this is just so beautifully done. And again, it's her first novel. I can't believe it's her first.
Give us the title again.
It's called A Place for Us.
Okay.
And then there's a Japanese import by a woman named Sayaka Murata, and it became this unlikely international bestseller called Convenience Store Woman. And it's about a young woman who is not like any of the people in her life. And she loves the convenience store work that she does. She likes the routines, the sales, the habits of it. And her family is pressuring her to get married and live a normal, quote, normal life. And she is not your typical person. It's a fresh voice. I've never read any voice quite like hers. And the choices she makes veer so often from the choices that our usual spectrum of friends would make. It's just a fascinating, funny, quirky read.
I like both of those. That sounds great. For me, I find that most of my available time that could be reading is actually in the car. And so I've sort of gravitated to listening to things. And whether it's listening to podcasts or actually even for this show, sometimes I can find an audiobook version of a book that I'm reading to do an author interview. And Amy Olson, you have some audiobook recommendations. What makes a good audiobook?
Oh, I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and I could answer that question in a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's just a connection.
connection with the narrator or the person who's reading it. And sometimes even if you don't have an immediate connection with the narrator.
You mean like you just like the sound of
their
voice?
Like the sound of their voice. They do a really good job at reading the text. But also sometimes there isn't that immediate connection, but the story just takes over and then it doesn't matter who's reading it. So one of the books that I think translated into a wonderful audio is on Dorothy's list this year called See You in the Cosmos by Jack Chang. It is an adventure story of 11-year-old Alex Petrosky. His best friend is a dog named Carl Sagan, who's named after Alex's hero. And the whole story is told into Alex's golden iPod that he hopes to launch on a rocket into space, like Carl Sagan did with the Golden Record. And the reason why the audio is so fantastic is because, first of all, the narrator is a child who's reading the story. And it's as though we are perhaps the alien forms who have found this golden iPod and are listening to the entire story. There are a few sound effects and other adult voices that come in and read some of the parts. It's really well done.
There are some I would recommend an M.T. Anderson read on audiobook because his books are so great and fantastical. And some of the audiobooks have sound effects sort of built into them that are really, that make it almost more of an audio drama than an audiobook. And, you know, the only problem I have with audiobooks, if I'm then interviewing an author, is then I sit in front of the author and I'm like, that's not the voice that you're supposed to have. You shouldn't
right,
have that accent.
Right. And I'm not sure that authors always have any choice in that.
Right.
So it's an interesting translation of their story.
Let's go to Mish, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hey, Mish, go right ahead.
Hi, folks. Very quick, I just finished reading Madeleine Albright's Fascism, A Warning. It's well written. It's scholarly. She's a professor, and she shows it. It has reference materials, and I guess I would say the warning part has to be taken seriously. Take it seriously. Take a look at it. I'm pretty convinced you're going to like it. That's about it.
Mish, thanks for the call. So Fascism by Madeleine Albright. Appreciate that recommendation. Ed is calling in from Montpelier. Ed, are you taking us down that same dark path or somewhere else?
No, somewhere else. At the beginning of the program, you were talking about relevant books, political books.
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently read a very fascinating look at our current politics. The question he starts with, Kurt Anderson in Fantasyland, is how did we get into this position where we have Trump as a president? And then he makes a very interesting historical delving into America's past all the way back to the very beginning to point out that American culture is based on just a continuing fantasy. It starts from the Spaniards invading America with their eye on gold, new land, and converting the natives all the way up through right to the present day. It's fascinating.
Hmm. I appreciate that. Thanks for the recommendation, Ed, at Fantasyland by Kurt Anderson. And maybe you could pair it with a book I'm reading right now in preparation for an interview with the author. I'll be talking with Steve Allman tomorrow night at Bear Pond Books in Montpelier about his new book, Bad Stories. And it sounds like that would go really well with Kurt Anderson's book, sort of these same ideas of how we not only build our communities, but then build our ideas of who we are and where that might be falling apart. If you have a recommendation for us along these lines or maybe a whole new direction, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your notes on the VPR page or the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net so everybody can see your recommendations. Amy Howlett, what about you? Another thought from you on a great book that we should all be picking up?
Well, you know, I love the backlist in libraries and bookstores when we can go back and revisit something we met years ago. And I am still a huge fan of Dick Francis. So this summer I reread Straight which is a mystery. Francis was a professional jockey, and his main character is a professional jockey who has inherited his dead brother's semi-precious stone business. And it was just so much fun. We did Libraries Rock, as most Vermont public libraries did this summer. We had Fun Bargains Jewelers come in to talk about semi-precious and precious stones. And here's a whole novel set in that world. I also am hearing people say, of course, there's always a huge readership for detective and mystery fiction, but I'm also hearing people say, you know, it's very challenging thinking through everything. Please give me a book that at the end I know who the bad guys are.
Yes.
Nothing gray, just black and white, and Dick Francis delivers.
You're getting yeses from our other two guests here. Amy and Elizabeth, you agree people want something where they actually at least don't have to figure out, like, is everybody bad or is everybody good?
As much as the political books are very popular and the horror books are very popular, I'm also having a lot of people coming in and say, can you just recommend something uplifting, please?
We got a recommendation from Alpha 16, who says, I recently completed Grant, a biography by Ron Chernow, and also This Army Does Not Retreat, the memoirs of General George H. Thomas by Jack Zakin. I didn't know a lot about General Grant aside from some general knowledge of his Civil War success in the West and, of course, his defeat of Lee in Virginia. And Debbie says, The Stranger in the Woods, the extraordinary story of the last true hermit by Michael Finkel. Fascinating. A Maine woods hermit, how he survived, why he did it, commentary on life and modern culture. And from this year's Dorothy's List, Refugee by Alan Gratz, three stories of families in different times and places who are displaced and trying to find home. And Debbie, The Stranger in the Woods, that is one that's still on my bookshelf, too. I really want to read that one, nonfiction about this hermit in Maine who was discovered. My dad recommended that one to me, and it turns out my dad is calling in. Carl from Cornwall, what are you recommending today?
Well, I'm recommending that is a wonderful book, The Stranger in the Woods. I'm recommending a book called One Goal by Amy Bass. One Goal, A Coach, A Team, and the Game That Brought Together a Divided Town. And it's the story of the immigrant and refugee influx into Lewiston, Maine. And there are literally 7,000 African, mostly Somali immigrants in Lewiston, Maine, a city, the second largest city in Maine, 36,000 people, 7,000 Africans. And of course, they play a lot of football, a lot of soccer, and they took over they became a primary part of the high school soccer team and won a state championship in 2015. It's quite dramatic because, as you can imagine, their presence in this poor industrial, post-industrial city was not without tension and friction. And it's like any good sports book. It's not really about sports.
And Dad, you're from Lewiston. Are people who don't have a connection to Lewiston, Maine, going to like it too?
Oh, it's a bestseller. I mean, it can be enjoyed by in the cultural terms. Anybody who likes sports, anybody who's in it, it's very contemporary in the sense that it's really about introducing refugees and immigrants into these communities and how that gets done and what that involves. And Lewiston, of course, was a factory town, and it always had immigrants, mostly Franco-Americans. It's just a fascinating study with a lot of sports in it, but it has a larger theme.
Well, I can't wait to talk to you about it over dinner sometime, maybe Thursday. That's my dad, Carl, from Cornwall, calling in. The book is One Goal, and let's go to Lucy in Keysville, New York. Hi, Lucy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much. As Elizabeth recommended these books to me, and she knows it's Lucy, she's probably going to guess immediately what I am going to recommend. But I am an unapologetic children's book reader, and these two books are by a woman author. They are called The War That Saved My Life and The War I Finally Won. Is Elizabeth smiling?
She is. She's saying under her breath, amazing. It's amazing. Lucy, you say you're an unapologetic children's book reader, and you shouldn't have to apologize, but why? What is it about young adult books?
Well, I just love them. I mean, there are whole series of books that I reread over and over again. I will tell you that I have read these two particular books at least 20 times each since Elizabeth recommended them to me. They are about two children during World War II in England. I was born during World War II, so I find that time in history particularly interesting. But two other series of books that I really love are the Arthur Ransom books and the series of books by an author named Ralph Moody that people are mostly unfamiliar with. But I just spent a week in Maine and reread many times while I was up there his book called The Fields of Home, which is about, interestingly, the area right near what your dad was just talking about, Lisbon Falls, which is right near Litchfield, and his experiences on a farm with his grandfather back in 1913. So these are the books I read over and over in the summer, and there are other series of children's books that I read over and over in the winter. But these two particular books, the War That Saved My Life and The War I Finally Won, have so many topics in them that are either alluded to or outright talked about very openly that I think are so important for children to understand, fascism being one of them, because, of course, this was the era of Hitler and
Lucy,
World War.
What I love about this is not only the great recommendations, but, you know, it's so cool to use, you know, the basic words that you can think of one book and that leads you to, oh, that reminds me of this other book that I read. And, oh, if you're reading about towns in Maine, you should read about this one from Lisbon Falls. It's right near Lewiston. It just, that's the wonder of reading and of being well-read, is that you find one book that connects you to something else, that connects you to what's happening today, that takes you back to the past and makes you understand our history. And I appreciate, Lucy, you bringing that into this conversation. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Amy Howlett is director of the Springfield Town Library. Elizabeth Blumley is the owner of the Flying Pig Bookstore in Shelburne. Amy Olson is library director at Lanford Memorial Library in Hyde Park. And they are here today helping to create an atmosphere of reading. You can almost smell that great book smell as we talk about all these titles that we have been reading or want to be reading or should be reading or maybe even didn't like reading. That's okay, too. If you have something that you want to steer us away from, I'm happy to hear that non-recommendation as well. Sarah in Escutney says, Percival Everett. I've just discovered him and everything that he has written is so fabulous. I can't understand why he's not more famous. I hate to suspect that it's because he's African-American and writes about cowboys, among other varied subjects. Often you're not even aware that the main character is black until halfway through the book, which makes you question your assumption about the racial identity of main characters. Jeff recommends The Death of Expertise by Tom Nichols. Joanna recommends The Sun Does Shine by Anthony Ray Hinton. And Ed in Montpelier recommends Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century by Jessica Bruder, and The Unsettlers by Mark Sundin. And let's go to Ned calling in from Waitsfield. Hi, Ned. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great.
I thought the Ron Chernow recommendation a couple of callers ago is great, because Hamilton and Washington will bring tears to your eyes. But what I'm calling about is Dear Diary Boy by Kumiko Makihara, who's a Japanese journalist who's got a lot of American connections. It's a very raw, emotional memoir about raising her adopted Kazakh son without a husband, and getting him through kind of an elite private school and Japan, and just all the culture and the turmoil that goes into Japanese education, but also, you know, this personal relationship between her and her son. And I don't remember the publisher, but a friend recommended it, and I really enjoyed it.
And it's called Dear Diary Boy?
Yeah, because a lot of the kids write into their diaries from about 5 or 6 years old, and what she does is take excerpts from those diaries and kind of play them into them, all the challenges she was facing of getting this kid to this school and the judgments of the other parents and the faculty and kind of a traditional Japanese educational program. And just really fascinating. And actually, her boy is starting at Clark University this fall, is what I've heard.
Well, Ned, that's great. I appreciate that recommendation. Very cool. And I like thinking about these sort of cross-cultural difficulties and misunderstandings when it's not directly related to the United States. I think we always so center ourselves in these conversations, but it must be interesting to read as well about the difficulties and nuances of cross-cultural relationships when it doesn't involve us for a change. Mary Lou is on the line from Essex Junction. What are you recommending, Mary Lou?
Hi, I was going to call about a book I'm almost finished with called A Gentleman in Moscow. The author is Amor Towles, T-O-W-L-E-S, and it's kind of a quiet book. This gentleman is under house arrest in Moscow for a poem that he wrote, and it goes from 1922 to 1952. And you wouldn't think he could make much of a life living in a hotel, but it's a very wonderful hotel, and believe it or not, you can't wait to find out what's going to happen next.
That sounds great. A Gentleman in Moscow. Mary Lou, thank you for that recommendation. I'm going to come back to our guest, but get one more in here from Ellie in Hanover, New Hampshire first. Hi, Ellie. Go right ahead.
Hi. I will be traveling to Greece and the Greek islands in September. And when I travel, I love to read local. My nonfiction is going to be Plato's Republic, taking it back to the roots of critical thinking. But I'm looking for fiction, any good Greek fiction.
Uh-oh. You've really put our guests on the spot, but it sounds like Elizabeth Blumley might have a recommendation for you.
So it's not fiction, but it reads like fiction, which might do the trick. If you haven't read Gerald Durrell's My Family and Other Animals, it is one of my maybe top 10 books of all time. It is a sheer delight to read. It's like reading Sunshine, and it's set on the island of Corfu when Jerry, who was then 10 years old, moves with his family, his mother and her four kind of ungovernable teens and Jerry. They move from London to Corfu, and it is about their adventures. It's very funny and a wonderful read.
What's it called again?
My Family and Other Animals.
My Family and Other Animals. Amy Howlett, I can't see you. Do you have a recommendation?
Well, I'd go back to Mary Renault. I mean, she's old, but I loved her stuff. The Bull from the Sea, that mix of mythology. It's not current Greece, but you know, when you're going to a country that has such ancient roots, and you're already reading Plato's Republic, R-E-N-A-U-L-T. Libraries will have her. You can find her.
Excellent. And I'm going to bring in another recommendation here from Carla, who says, The Wailing Art Journal of Abigail M. Case, illustrated by gifted Woodstock resident Christina Rodanis. Excellent, sensitive, inspiring, and informative. And, you know, Carla is recommending The Wailing Art Journal, but Amy and Elizabeth are both recommending about a book about a different whale. So, Amy, let's start with you. You want to tell us about this Vermont whale?
I would love to. So, Springfield author, new author, Erin Rounds, she's actually a fourth grade teacher, has written a wonderful book for children called Charlotte's Bones. And Charlotte is a beluga whale who was found, I think, in like 1879 in a farmer's field in Shalott. Rounds goes back and paints a picture of the beluga back when the sea was covering Shalott, back when the sea and the glaciers, you know, very long ago, thousands and thousands of years. And she must have swept into a marsh and been left, and then her bones were covered by sediment. And today you can go and see them in see a replica in the Echo Museum. But I think children love fossils and they love dinosaurs, and many of them know about beluga whales thanks to children's songs. So I think this is just a great opportunity to visit that appreciation. The book, I think Elizabeth will know exactly, but I think it's not out until the end of August. But keep your ears open. Erin Rounds is touring around and doing appearances and signing books. And we were thrilled to have her in Springfield, of course.
Well, Elizabeth actually brought the hardcover copy in. It's one of the props that she brought in here. And I'm glad that Amy said the title, because I was thinking, is it Charlotte's Bones? Is it Charlotte's Bones? Elizabeth, you, what do you like about it?
It's beautifully illustrated in addition to being beautifully told. And I do think it's always a delight to have Vermont books. There are so many great new Vermont books out, and this is one of them. And it's so well done on both ends of text and art. I think Vermonters are going to eat this one up. And also, there's a brand new book about Mount Philo that's just come out. I don't know if you've seen it, Amy, but it's called The Secrets of Mount Philo, A Guide to the History of Vermont's First State Park. And she uses
This is also in Charlotte, Vermont. So if you're not
Charlotte.
In the sort of northwestern part of the state, that's where Mount Philo is.
It's right. And it's a very tiny mountain. It's small but majestic. And this was written by Charlotte resident Judy Chaves. And she uses primary sources and photographs, and it tells you everything you would ever want to know about Mount Philo. So we feel very celebrated out in Charlotte.
You brought another local author in, too. I'm going to give you a chance to plug the other authors you brought in, too.
So Kate Messner isn't actually a Vermonter. She's over in Plattsburgh, but we consider her an honorary Vermonter. And her recent novel, Breakout, is based on the Clinton Correctional Facility real life breakout. And what Kate does so beautifully always is to take, she weaves stories. The fiction is wonderful, but her research informs all of her stories, and she tackles difficult issues very gracefully. And Breakout also involves issues of social justice, racial assumptions that people make, especially in more homogenous communities. It's a beautiful, beautifully done book, and it's told in all kinds of different formats, texts and notes and news articles and fake news articles. It's really well done. It's called Breakout.
I think we have an interview with Kate Messner that we've done about that.
Very well might.
Yeah, so we'll check on that. If we do, we'll link to it. Other local authors, Amy Olson, that you would recommend, or books that you just, you know, we're running out of time here. You have very little limited time to shove a book in our face.
It's not a local author. It's actually quite the opposite, but I read a really weird book that I loved so much. It's called Woman at 1,000 Degrees by Hallgrímur Helgason. It's translated from Icelandic. It's a bedridden 80-year-old woman named Hera who's looking back on her life from her rented garage space where her belongings are only her hospital bed, a laptop, and an old hand grenade. And she flashbacks to her childhood from a remote island in Iceland, and then as a teen when she was separated from her parents during World War II and had to survive on her own. As an old woman, she is bawdy and witty, and although the story isn't exactly funny, there are some very funny parts. And it also just kind of reflects how war can scar both physically and emotionally.
That sounds wonderful.
It's
great. We're actually now getting some recommendations for Ellie about fiction to read before her trip to the Greek islands. Let's see. Angela Evansy of VPR recommends Outline by Rachel Cusk. And Janice says Zorba the Greek, of course, would be a great one. And we will link to that Kate Messner interview, I'm being told. Yes, we do have it. We have it linked up. You know, I have been, again, reading mostly children's books. And in my family, we've been going through the Roald Dahl collection. And my husband is British, and so it's been a real pleasure to sometimes sit in the other room and listen to this Welsh voice read this Welsh author and all of the body language that Roald Dahl brings to the table, which I'm not sure we want our children to know, but hey, you know, that's fun. So I would highly recommend going through all the Roald Dahl books. They are just, sometimes I want to read ahead when my kids aren't around because they're so fun to read. And we got another note, Gerald Durrell, The Talking Parcel, also a fantasy novel that starts on the island of Corfu. That's from Sam Gale Rosen right here at Vermont Edition. Amy Hallett, you've got 30 seconds to give us one more recommendation.
Saladish, Eileen Rosen. What to do with all those little skinny Japanese eggplants, tomatoes, and all that stuff that floods in at the end of the summer. Salads, but Saladish too. Turn it into dinner.
I'm so glad you did that, Amy. I've been hoping for at least one cookbook recommendation.
It's a good one.
Good. I will go and look at it myself. That's Amy Hallett, director of the Springfield Town Library. Amy, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Amy Olson is library director at Lanford Memorial Library in Hyde Park. Amy, it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Shane.
And Elizabeth Blumley is the owner of the Flying Pig Bookstore in Shelburne. She's also a children's book author herself. Elizabeth, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, keep them coming. You can find all of our results. It'll take us a little bit of time to post them, but we are going to try to post a list of all the books we talked about in today's show. You'll find it at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition. You'll see today's show page.